Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Justine Rutolo, also known as Miss ADD, and I want to welcome everybody who's listening to the Miss ADD Hour. And I have a co-host with me tonight, and his name is Anthony Marino. And Anthony, you want to say hi?
Hello, how's it going?
So Anthony works with the really difficult population, adolescents, and so he's going to be spending some time with us tonight. We're going to be talking and having some conversations about the best way to really parent adolescents with ADD. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to start off with talking about our childhood, right? Our adolescent years, okay?
yeah.
And what our parents were. So I'm about 20 years older than Anthony, but we're both Italian, and I'm from New York, and he grew up here in Southern California, but we have shared some stories, and even though he's 20 years younger than me, they're kind of similar. So my parents, like yours, were just extremely strict.
Yeah, I think Italians, you know, every culture kind of shares the same thing. And Italians, I think we can know across the board, it's like there's just something about their kind of parenting skills where it's usually like a hand first, and then they ask questions later, like, what's the matter with you, you know, like, why are you crying, you know, and then they hit you, and they're like, why are you still crying, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on?
And the word that I had in my house, or the saying was, I'll give you something to cry about. But anyway, so when I was a teenager, of course, my life was very controlled. My parents were very, very, very strict. You know, I went to Catholic school my whole life, went to Catholic high school. So any place I was going, they needed to know. They usually had my father usually had to drive me, pick me up. When I went to school dances, I mean, it was just over the top controlling. And it really hurt me tremendously because I never really grew up with all that. What about you?
Yeah, you know, my parents, it's weird. When my early childhood, it wasn't that bad. And then all of a sudden, I got put in Catholic school, you know, from like fifth grade on. And then my whole life had this whole like really routine-ish, more strictness to it, I felt, in a way. And it also was hard, too, because my dad was a police officer. So that like added to the stress of like naturally trying to become an individual at the same time, like having to obey all these rules. And so eventually you get to the point where you did as well, which you're going to mention right here, is where you kind of go a little nuts. I mean, in the deep end, in the sense of like, you just rebel against all that and the sharp, you know, turn. So I did that in high school, but you know, I remember I heard you talking about how you just like every kid eventually, I think you'll find your way to like totally rebelling against anything your parents do if they're like too overbearing, you know?
Well, yeah, because you know, we weren't allowed to really tell them how we felt. And on top of that, we were both had attention deficit disorder.
Correct, yeah.
And back in the Stone Age, when I grew up, there was no such thing as ADD. When you grew up, I'm sure there was.
Yeah, right when I remember being like in third grade, and I kind of tested for it, and they had just come out with like the only medication was Ritalin. That was it.
Okay.
And it was in the pure form. And I remember looking at it in my cabinet, and I was so scared because like I didn't want people to think I was crazy, you know, like I was like, I'm not a crazy kid. I'm just really active. I knew I wasn't crazy, you know. And I felt because, you know, I didn't want to be stuck in that category,
right,
you know, of
right,
being crazy. And my parents didn't give it to me and my mom because at the time it was brand new stuff. You know, this had just come out. This is like the early, mid-80s, you know,
right,
like 85, 86. And so, you know, she didn't, you know, this is like experimental, so she didn't want to mess with it that much. Even though a doctor gave it to her, she wasn't sure. It really helped me.
Did it help you?
You know, I never took it. It was just in my cabinet, I remember.
Okay.
And my parents just never made me take it. And then I think my mom respected me in that way because she was like, I was like, I don't want to take it. It's make me crazy, you know?
But as you look back on it.
As I look back on it, like now that like we have all the medications and knowledge we do today and the years of it.
Would it have helped you think, better in school to focus and attend? Would you have done better in school?
You know, it might have now that I look back upon it. And I think obviously like me and you will both agree on this, like it was a good solution, but it wasn't the full solution.
Exactly.
And I think like a combination might have definitely helped me for sure. I think a lot of my problems, which we can get into a whole different subject, we could do like two talk shows on this, will be the education system in general, you know,
right,
just like our whole thing on systematic education. We could have like three shows on that, you know,
right.
But I think a lot of it was is that, and just being, I mean, I'm sure like everybody who has ADD out there can agree, is that for people with ADD, systematic education like really doesn't work as well, and you fall like a lot further behind, I feel, than the other students, because you just think differently.
Yes.
You know, you don't think in the same prospect, like, you have to learn this, and then you have to learn this, you know?
So it's, which let's just, we're digressing a little
bit. Yeah, from the point,
Because we're ADD.
Yeah, but yeah, I was going to say, exactly. But no, the ADD medication did work, and I mean, I think I should have took it. Now I look back upon it, but at the time, I mean, you're like, you don't know how this is going to develop your growth. It's experimental. I mean,
right.
This is like when some new drug comes out, you're like, what's this stuff? This is kind of dangerous, you know?
Right. Okay, so here's what we're going to talk about first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Anthony and I were discussing when we talked about our adolescent years. So we weren't coached by our parents. We were controlled, with a capital C. They had to know where we were at all times, what we were doing, who our friends were. They put tabs on, you know, everything, the driving, and I didn't have cell phones when I was a teenager, so they couldn't find me, thank God.
No, I didn't have them either. Like, they didn't come out to, like, start becoming really big till like, after high school for me.
Right.
Because I was still in 2000, you forget. Like, they just come, my friend had a cell phone sophomore year, and his mom had it in the car, and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy, you know?
Right. So what we're going to talk about right now is, if there's parents listening out there, is how to really coach your kids. So this takes a little bit of work, because it really goes hand in hand with communication and how we communicate with our adolescent children, okay, because this can be difficult. This is a time when they are really starting to become narcissistic, so everything's about them. This is a time when they're trying really hard to pull away, and we're dragging them back because we're terrified. We're so frightened about things that can go wrong. So one of the things I recommend for all the parents that are listening is, if you're in the Southern California area, let me know. Please look at my website, missadd.com, and I'd be more than happy to help you with mindfulness training, because you're going to need this when you're dealing with your adolescent, because it's a very difficult time. So what do I mean by coaching? It's exactly what I do when I work with people, because I'm a coach. I'm an ADD and life coach. So I'll ask questions. If somebody brings an issue to me about what do I do about this, I'll ask them, well, what do you think you should do? And see, that's where I think would help your child to learn communication skills, as they come to you and they have dilemmas that they want to ask questions and say, Mom or Dad, what do you think? I think you need to go back to them and say, well, tell me what you think you should do. Because that's how they learn not only coping mechanisms, but they also learn the decision-making process, which is really, really important for your adolescent with ADD to individuate, to become an individual, to grow up. This process will not happen if they are tethered to you, meaning really so close that they can't pull away. They need to be able to get away from you during the adolescent years and come back and forth. What do you think about that, Anthony? You have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I totally can see that. You know, you have, you know, as Ms. ADD was saying before, I work with kids on extreme levels, and you can see what the both sides of the spectrum have to offer. When you're too over the top, you know, it's usually the kid has major issues, like which we're talking about now, and then there's the parents who don't invest in their kid at all. Those are the kids I usually end up with. That's the worst case scenario. I mean,
right.
You know, if you're too over the top, it can be very bad for the kid's future, but usually they turn out okay, you know, they're relatively okay.
Right. If they're able to pull away.
Yeah, if they're able to pull away a little bit. As they get older, they usually like are able to get a little bit of distance, so they're okay. But I agree with that assessment, what you were saying, you know.
So I think that also one of the things I want to share with everybody who's listening is, if your child is getting ready to go to college in September, one of the things you're going to notice this summer is they're going to be very angry, and there's going to be some fighting going on. And this is part of the separation process. Before a child goes off, think about it. They've lived with you in the safety of your home for their entire life, and they're going off to college. And this is, you know, not only in the world of ADD, this is across the board, but it's sometimes can become exacerbated. It did with my son before he left for school for college. They get very angry because they're scared and they don't know what to do. So instead of arguing with them, my suggestion would be that you talk to them about how they're feeling. Get them to talk to you, because the more you communicate with your adolescent, the better off it's going to be for both of you. You're just going to feel better about what they're doing. The other thing I want to tell you, and I have two boys who are 25 and 22, and when they were in high school, every time they would leave the house, I would say to them, you know, I really trust that you're going to make the right decision. And that really, really helped them to make the right decision. Because if you think about it, Anthony, if your parents had said that to you on the way out the door, wouldn't you have thought twice about doing some of the things you did and some of the things that I did when we were younger?
Yeah, I don't know, though. I think it would have. I just always had that, like, Catholic guilt thing going on over me anyways, you know. But,
right.
But yeah, I think if you just show that, at least like you're saying in a way, or that you give them, yeah, you just tell them, hey, you know, I trust you, you know. Especially
right.
Like even when kids are going on the weekend, if you say like, hey, you know, I trust you're going to make the right decisions, all right? Don't do anything stupid or something, you know. But, I mean, you just want to say in a positive way.
Exactly.
I think that's what Justine's getting at. I think, absolutely, I think that totally, like, psych out your kid, you know.
Right. Because I really believe that the more they feel that we trust them,
mm-hmm.
the better they're going to be able to make decisions concerning doing something, you know, that's dangerous or, you know, doing something that's not acceptable. And then in the back of their head is that voice of their parent saying to them, I really trust you. I know you're going to make the right decisions. And I know a lot of you out there are probably thinking, well, does that really work? Try it. Trust me, it works. But you got to try it. And you got to keep doing it. You got to keep working at it. So I want all of you to go out, if you haven't gotten this book already, and get the book Scattered. And it's by Dr. Gabor Maté. He became a favorite of mine a couple of years ago. I was working in the world of substance abuse to get hours towards my MFT license, and I found a book of his that he had written in online was Scattered, which he had written in 1978, that being an ADD coach for 20 years, I had never seen before. This is the most amazing book I've ever read, because what Dr. Gabor Maté does is he talks about what's underneath, lying underneath the ADD symptoms. Oppositional defiant, he goes from children, adolescents, adults, couples. It's an amazing book. So if you haven't gotten it, I would really encourage you to go out and get it. And one of the things that I wanted to share with you that he says is, along with attachment, the other necessary condition for the development of motivation is autonomy. So what does he mean by attachment? You know, attachment theory, this is something that I became familiar with in graduate school that I didn't know. I went to Pepperdine to get my MFT. And what they taught us was that when children are very little, how they attach to their caregivers, you know, whether it's a mom, a dad, a grandma, whoever's raising them, is probably the most important thing so that that child can really be healthy and can attune and really be in touch with themselves, know who they are. So there's a lot of reasons why attachment doesn't happen correctly. And I'm not going to go into that tonight, but this is why Gabor Maté is talking about attachment here. So he says, along with attachment, the other necessary condition for development of motivation is autonomy. Autonomy being the same thing as individuation, becoming your own person. So he says, people need to feel that their behavior is truly chosen by them rather than imposed by some external source. So here's something. I work with a lot of adolescents, and when I see the parents beating them over the head, not literally, figuratively, to get them to do something that they want them to do, what I notice is that the child, the adolescent, I'm sorry, will pull back. And say, you know, I'm not doing that. And whether they're saying it out loud or internally, it's because the parent is not allowing them to make these decisions on their own. They're kind of beating them over the head, and they're so worried all the time that the child doesn't get to really be motivated, internally motivated. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's kind of true now that I think about it. You know, you get a lot of I think a lot of it comes too from the parent only knowing one style of discipline, you know, or they're just not, like you're saying, like they're beating them over the head, or they just try one thing. Like, you know, what did your parents do is what we all kind of do, you know, like how do our parents discipline? We pick that up. And a lot of times, like, well, in an Italian family, it's all about yelling.
Right.
And, like, hand-waving, right?
Right.
And, like, getting in your face. So
right.
It's kind of like a grounding down process. It's like they ground you down until they beat you down with, like, words and screaming and madness, you know. And like you say, it's like the person never gets to, like, express themselves, you know.
No. And I also think that in the world of ADD,
yeah,
we have a lot of parents that get very, very worried because they don't see their children, you know, doing the same things that other children who don't have ADD
Correct.
Do. So what they do is they want them to succeed. They want them to be able to remember things. That's a big one. And a lot of your inattentive type of ADD are off thinking about all the creative things.
Yeah,
they
you're kind
do.
Of. They kind of look like my kid's a problem. Fix it, kind of thing.
Right.
And you're like, it's not. There's like, we'll talk about this later, but there's nothing really to fix, you know.
Right.
So that's the way they kind of view it, you know. At a certain point, I think a lot of them, you know.
So to go on with this for a minute, what else he says in the book, because this is really important, is people need to feel that their behavior is truly chosen by them, rather than imposed by some external source. Mm-hmm. That the locus of initiation of their behavior is within themselves rather than in some external control. Supporting the child's autonomy or individuation, Dr. Dietschy points out, means being able to take the other person's perspective and work from there. It means actively encouraging self-initiation, experimentation, and responsibility. And it may very well require setting limits. But autonomy support functions through encouragement, not pressure. So just like what I was saying, when a parent's standing over a child who's ADD because they're not, you know, doing the things that the parent believes they need to do all the time, by standing over them and putting the pressure on them, they are not developing autonomy nor allowing the child to develop that internal motivation that they need to do. So this is why, when I work with parents of adolescents, I will encourage them to, number one, communicate very clearly with their child. They have to set limits, especially where safety issues are concerned. I used to tell my boys that where a safety issue was concerned, they would see me get angry. If they didn't answer their cell phone, if they weren't home on time, if they were driving and they weren't using their, you know, the right, using their head when they were driving, using, you know, doing things the right way. You know, there was absolutely, totally no tolerance at all for any kind of drinking, getting in the car with anybody who was drinking. These are all safety issues, and these are things that have to be explained to your adolescent what your triggers are. So for safety, if that's your biggest thing, you've got to explain that to them. Sit them down, talk to them. Tell them what you expect from them. Don't try to control what they're doing. Coach them. Ask them questions, like I said before. Ask them, what would you do in a situation like that? Spend time with them. That's really, really important. And allow them that autonomy. Allow them the time to experiment, to really find out who they are, so that that motivation that all the parents of the kids that I work with say, can you get them motivated? Can you help me get them motivated? Well, you know, it's a family system thing. And that's one of the reasons that I like to work with the families too, because this is something that has to come from the parents. That motivation absolutely comes with autonomy. It does.
Yeah.
It's the only way it works.
Yeah, it's really the only way. I mean, you have to let the kid, you know, find his own way. But at the same time, like Justine's saying, you know, you have to just remember that, you know, kids are going to do, especially like at that certain age, they're going to go explore in the way she's saying. And whether it's a way you approve of or you don't, you just have to set the limits on, are you going to be safe, whatever you're going to do, you know?
Right.
And especially, like, and it's a hard boundary to look at, because you might not approve of what they're going to go do. If a kid's going to go to a party or he's going to go do something, you know? But you just have to, where you may have to set the boundary is how are you getting home, you
right.
know? Oh, do you need me to come pick you up, you
right.
know? Like, that kind of thing. Like, here's my number. Don't be stupid. Call me.
No matter what
yeah.
time it is.
No matter what time it is, call
right.
me. I'll come get you. You know, that kind of thing. Because you have to be aware of what's going to happen. And, you know, that's just something that, you know, that's going to be a part of life for some of these people, you know?
Well, for adolescents,
for the kids, especially for the kids. You
they're
going
to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And it's not a function of bad parenting most of the time. These there was 5 kids this past week who were down in Newport Beach who got into a very, very bad car accident. They were all killed.
Oh.
And, you know, people on the radio this week were talking about, you know, who were the parents and where were the parents. And you know what? I have to tell you, I'm sure that...
Was it drunk driving?
Some of this, no. It absolutely was not drunk driving. It was, they were driving too fast.
Oh.
That's what happened. And they were coming around a turn, and they kind of, I guess, slipped. They were new drivers. They were 16 and 17 years
okay.
old. And they crashed into a pole, and the kids were ejected, and everyone was killed.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, but it isn't, I can't stand when I hear people wanting to totally blame the parents, because the reality is, whether children are ADD or they're not, they're going to seek out things to do that may not always be safe.
I mean, I think every person here at one point, at least males, all I know, that are going to listen to this, is that what's the first thing you do when you get a new car? See how fast it goes.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
that's a given. Like, I remember I got my Toyota Corolla, and I was, like, driving home, and there was this long stretch on the freeway, and I was like, well, let's just see how fast this thing can go, you know? I mean, it's just, like, the natural thing to do when you get a new car.
Right.
So, I mean, it happens, unfortunately. That's a sad situation, but like she's saying, well,
yeah.
It's a kid, you know?
It's very
boys,
sad,
yeah.
and that's why you've got to constantly, I know I keep saying this, but it's so important, you've got to constantly communicate with your child. And if you can't communicate with them, if it's difficult to talk to them because they won't talk to you or you get angry right away, I'm encouraging you to, no matter where you are, is to seek out help for this. There's plenty of people that are communication experts out there. I happen to be, that's one of my biggest things is communication. So if you're in the Southern California area and you need my help, please contact me through missadd.com, or you can also go to my Facebook page, which is missadd, because I would love to be able to help you and have a happy, you know, peaceful kind of family for you and your children and your spouse to be in. So, okay, so here's the second thing I wanted to talk about tonight. Let's talk about creative mindset, because I know that 99% of the people that I've worked with over the past 20 years that are ADD are creative. Is that correct?
I'd say definitely, for sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So what I find is that when you find a creative connection, for example, especially at school, like with my boys, when we moved to Southern California, my oldest son was going to be a junior in high school, and my younger son was going into eighth grade. So this was a hard time for them because we were moving and they were at those really volatile ages. And so I made sure that my son got involved in something creative, and he became the news director on Live from 205, which is a Palos Verdes high school. And then my other son ended up doing the same thing. So that connection, let me explain this to the parents, is the director of the program said, you get less than C, then you're out of the program. So there was that academic connection because they wanted to stay in the creative side at the same time, which was Live from 205, which, by the way, was a live news program.
Oh, that's cool.
That ran twice a week. And the boys were behind the scenes, and some of the other kids were the, you know, newscasters and the sportscaster.
Okay, that's
nice. It was great. It was really, and it was a great group of kids, and it really kept them connected to the school. So I would encourage everybody out there who has children with ADD, adolescents, if you're noticing that they have a creative side, nurture it. Do whatever you can to nurture that side, especially if they're not doing as well academically as you would hope.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely crucial, because what happens, especially with ADD, kids who have the disabilities, the learning ones, are they you know, that's what they're labeled as. You find out it's hard for motivation sometimes, because, you know, they're not doing well in school, you know, their friends think they're stupid or something. So it's important to get them involved in something that's going to keep them motivated to try to push, at least for the academics, you know, and to get into things that maybe they can one day turn around. You never know. I mean, I know a kid who turned around. I mean, he got into computers. He was really into that. Now he's making, you know, everybody needs computers. Now he's making decent money doing that.
Right, and that's a very creative mindset.
Yeah.
A lot of people think it isn't, but it is. So here's the other piece of this whole thing that I think is really, really important. Okay. This is where I call ADD a gift.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So my book that's at the publisher, which is hopefully going to be done in the next month, really highlights the people, the very, very successful people, Steven Spielberg, for example, that are ADD, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I also have put some other people in there who I've worked with very closely who are highly, highly creative. So my son, my younger son, and here's a perfect example, he did okay in high school, probably had a 3.5 when he graduated, but he was, you know, working through anxiety and depression, and I didn't make him take the SAT because I didn't think it was important. And he went to a school up in San Francisco called the Academy of Art University. They did not ask for these kids to have the SAT because they understand the creative mindset. And so he started in that school in art and switched over, and now his major is it's music that he composes for movies, television, and video games. That's what he's learning, how to compose up there. And he's loving it. And what they do is they kind of intertwine the academic classes in with the music, so they don't really get bored with the mundane. He's going to graduate with a BS in fine arts. This is
mm-hmm.
a 4-year program. And I'm excited for him because he's doing great. I mean, he's never excelled like he is now because he's really found his passion.
Yeah, one of the craziest things, especially about having an ADD mindset, is, at least me, I did better in college. I felt like I was more motivated in college, even though I didn't do as well. I just felt like I was more motivated because at least for me, I remember the hardest part, at least when I was in high school and other schools, you have 6 subjects going on at once. You have 1 through 6. You have different periods, you know?
Right.
And it's so much to focus on. It was, like, hard for me. It was, like, all these subjects, you know? And every teacher is a different one, and you might not be – I was good at some, but I was terrible at other ones, you know? So it's hard to stay good at the other ones, and it was just – when you get to college, you get to pick what you really love, and you get to go for it, you know?
Right.
And so that sounds what your son's doing. He gets to pick what he loves, and he gets to, like, you know, he gets to, like, do what he loves, which is make music. And
right. And see, and I think that that's what's so important, because we tend to make so much out of school and the academics that these kids in particular who may not – excel and not, and I underline that word, not because they're not smart. They're brilliant. I mean, this is the elite population. They have executive function problems, so they don't have the executive secretary in the front of their brain that really helps them with the organization piece, and that is a lot of what happens. Also, it may be related to learning issues that they have, you know, different processing issues. It may be a lot of different things. But if you see that your child is creative, whether they draw or they do computers or they do digital animation or they do play guitar like you play guitar.
Yeah, play guitar,
right.
You dance, whatever, you know, like you'll be surprised how many ADD people are in the arts of some sort, and you don't even know they're ADD until one day they just tell you. I mean, there's a lot of ADD people now that I think about it now who, like, I just meet, and then you even come out like, oh, I'm ADD, and then they'll just tell you, like, oh, yeah, I am too, you know, and you're like, whoa, you know, you're just, like, in shock how many people are these days and how it's, like, a huge thing. Was it you that telling me that I know you're coming out with your book about the creative mindset, but weren't you telling me that, like, it's going up, like, the ratio of people who are coming out with it?
Yeah, that's what I heard, that it is going up. They're saying that there's times when they feel like it may be overdiagnosed.
Okay.
You know, they may be missing, it may be just anxiety, because some of the symptoms of if somebody has trauma,
oh,
anxiety can look very much like ADD, and it turns
it
out
must
that it,
not.
It, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I still, like you're saying, yeah, there's a lot of, I know some people, at least a couple of them who have ADD or ADHD or something like that, and they're very good at certain things, you
yeah.
know, like, and you, and she's absolutely right. I mean, my friend with the computer, I mean, he could build a computer, he's all into it, you know, he's a very successful person in many ways, and you would be like, you'd be like, wow, this is actually a really, he's really, yeah, he's a pretty successful person. Like, he could do things I can't, you know.
So that, and so the front of my book, the cover of my book was actually designed by my son, the one who's at Academy of Art University, and it's the Hollywood sign, but overlaid with ADD land, because what I tell kids that I work with, just to pump them up, because that's what you have to do, and really help them feel good about themselves,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of them in this population don't. I say, if it wasn't for ADD, there wouldn't be a Hollywood, and this is absolutely true.
You know how many actors and actresses, even that aren't in your book, who keep it to themselves, probably have ADD or ADHD
right.
or something. Like, I mean, I remember, like, and I'm sure, you know, people in Hollywood could test, like, I've even heard a couple of comedians, like really popular comedians, be like, I have ADD, you know? Or you hear them
Robin
joke about
Williams
it. Does. Yeah, you hear them joke about it, like, oh, yeah, my ADD, you know? And they're like, they're kicking in, and I'm like, oh, this guy's got ADD too? You know, you just laugh, you know? Because there's a lot of comedians, especially with ADD, I know
But
that.
They have an incredible creative mind.
Yeah,
though.
Creative mind to make people laugh.
Right.
Really, yeah.
Right, laugh, and they also, these are people that, you know, I went to see the Avengers last summer, and you can see all the animation and all the, you know, the different things that are done. These are people that are definitely ADD, and they have found their passion, and they're doing well. And I can guarantee you that if I sat down with them and had conversations about their adolescent years, they would probably say they had difficulties with their parents and they didn't do well in school. But they are excelling now big time, making a lot of money and happy with what they're doing. So
I agree with that completely.
So I think for everybody who's listening out there, really try and determine what it is that, whether it's your child or your adolescent, their creative side, determine that and really, really encourage it. You know, help them to do what they'd want to do and to find their passion. So, you know, just as a reminder, if anybody wants to call in and ask Anthony and I some questions, the phone number is 917-889-7025. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about driving for teenagers. Okay?
Driving, okay.
So one of the things that I find with people with ADD, myself included, when I first started driving, I had a heavy foot. So I was driving
heavy
very
foot.
Fast. Very fast, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think what I had. You know, yeah, I guess I had a heavy foot a little bit too. I remember I was always a pretty good driver, but yeah, I think at least when you're always young, you got a little bit of a heavy foot.
Right. But I noticed too that, you know, even as kids get older, because of the, you know, the ADD part of it and how we always want to move,
yeah,
we can drive faster than the average bear, so to speak.
We could, yeah. If we really need to, usually ADD people can drive because we like that adrenaline, like
right.
everything's like engaged all at once kind of thing.
Music's blaring,
you're going yeah. fast, you know, that kind of feeling. I agree with that completely.
Right.
Like, I think ADD, especially people when they're like really in a hurry and they need to get someplace, are pretty good drivers at that. But yeah, I don't know. You know, driving, it can be a good and a bad thing. Some people are with ADD. I don't know. Some people are, it's different when it comes to the drivers.
So here's what I'm going to tell all the parents out there, okay? This is something that before your child gets their license, okay? And in California, I think it's 16 that they can get their license.
Yeah, 16. Wow, that's so young.
That's crazy because do you know the area of the brain for depth perception doesn't develop until you're 18?
Really?
Yeah, so
you
got a big problem. Anyway, so when you've got these young drivers, and here's the first thing. You, as the parent, get to make the decision as to whether or not they are old enough to drive. Okay, so if you feel, because at 16, that they're too young, you get to make that decision. Because remember, emotionally, ADD, boys especially, are not the age that they're at. So, for example, for a boy who's 16, he's probably 14 emotionally. So you get to make that decision, but you can talk to them about it. You don't have to hammer them over it. You can just talk to them and tell them why you feel the way you do. That's really, really important. If you decide that your child can drive at 16, there are rules. They're not allowed to have friends in the car. These are my rules. These are state rules. They can't have anybody in the car below the age of 21. And that's really important, especially ADD. Remember having kids in the car when you were young?
Yeah, you know, that rule just came out, thank God, right, when I, like, got my license. So I was pretty lucky because, like, I had just gotten through, and then that rule came out, and I was pretty lucky. But, I do, you know, it totally makes sense why they have those rules now that I think about it, because...
Weren't you more distracted when your friends were in the
car? Yeah, but my, you know, I even have, like I said, I know somebody who's, like, 18 now, my cousin. And he has friends in his car, and he just looks like, I'm like, I don't trust him, and he's 18, you know, with friends in the car. And I'm like, you know, you get worried when you see 18-year-olds with that. So I totally get that. Yeah, and they just, like you said, the mindset's not there to be, like, paying attention on what you're supposed to be doing, which is driving.
No, because not only are they going to be texting, I hope not, but, you know, they text, they use their phone. They're not supposed to. It's against the law, but they don't think. They're impulsive. You got to remember that your kid with ADD has impulsivity. So they're not really thinking through the steps. And this is where you come in to help them. And here's the biggest thing. If your child is on medication, they are not allowed to get behind the wheel of that car unless they have their medication in their system. That is a rule you have to follow through on, because that's what's going to keep them focused. It's going to lessen the impulsivity and most likely is going to keep them alive. So I really encourage everybody out there who's getting ready for whether it's a boy or a girl to get their license, that you decide with them what's the right time, but ultimately it's your decision, and you have to have strict rules. When I work with adolescents, what I'll tell them is it's a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting behind the wheel of the car. It's like a weapon, and this is really responsibility. So here's the other thing. At 16, if you're noticing that their responsibility level is not there, you're asking them to do things, you know, pick up their clothes or do different things, and they're not, it's not happening, then they're probably not ready. And this isn't a punishment, but they're just probably not ready for that responsibility. When I grew up in New York, you got your license when you were 17, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was ready to drive because I was at really a natural kind of driver. And it was a natural progression. There wasn't any of my friends who didn't get their license back then. We all got our licenses. You know, nowadays it's a little different. My 22-year-old doesn't have a license. He never wanted to drive, and he's up in San Francisco, so he takes buses.
Well, there's just no need to drive in San Francisco.
No, he knew enough about himself that he didn't want to drive. My other son, who had about 6 accidents, you know, he got his license.
Yeah, man.
He's better now.
I wish Los Angeles had public transportation. That's another story, though. That's another show.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I think that's a very important point, what you're saying as far as the maturity level, especially in males, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, because I remember when I was 17 and I got my license and I did okay. I was probably one of the ones that did okay. But now that I think about it, I did some crazy stuff with my car, you know?
What'd you do?
Like, I remember one time in football, okay, I'll tell you this story. So one time, like, this guy pulled up right behind me, and we were in this parking lot. You know, football players were all sitting there, and we got into, like, a towing match. We're pushing each other against each other's cars, and my car starts doing, like, starts spinning out because, like, the rubber, you know, like, it can't get traction. So we're, like, pushing against each other, and everybody was laughing. I didn't care. My car was a piece of junk truck, but, you know what I mean? It did some weird, you know.
Right, and you didn't think that through.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, like, even in college, I remember, like, when you live on the East Coast, so you know all about donuts and being able to do donuts on, like, when the parking lot freezes over, you know?
Yes.
You can do donuts in the parking lot.
Yes, yeah.
So I've done that kind of stuff, too, with my car.
So we got some questions from the audience, so I'm going to read them, and we're going to answer these questions for people who are kind enough to send these in to us. So here's one. My son's room is a mess. How can I get him to keep his room clean? Okay, so here's a big...
Hey, you have to answer this one for me, too.
Yeah. Okay, I will. So here's a big thing, right? I tell parents all the time, don't pick your battles with your kids, and how their room looks should really not be one of your battles. Shut the door so you don't see it. But now here's where the consequences come into play. For example, if your son or your daughter is in sports and they've left their dirty clothes on the floor and they have practice, so they have a game, I mean, they're responsible for bringing it to you or to putting it in the washing machine, whatever your rules are, but it's not your job to run around like a chicken with your head cut off if their game is in an hour and their uniform is not clean. That's where the natural consequences come in.
Interesting.
Or if it's something that they really want to wear and it's laying on the floor, there's nothing you can do about that. You can be kind about it. I wouldn't be sarcastic about it. I wouldn't be mean. I would just explain to them, hey, you know what? We're not going to fight anymore over how your room looks. We're going to pull the door shut. But here's the deal. If you've got things in there that you can't find and it's missing and it's related to school or sports or clothes, it's your issue. It's not mine. So I really thank whoever it was that sent in that question, and I hope my answer helps you to really do the right thing.
That's good advice, actually. I like that.
Yeah, just kind of stay out of it, you know. I mean, it really doesn't help to start screaming and yelling about
what happens. Well, real quick, what happens if it's like one of those rooms that starts to get smelly, you know, like one of the, you know what I'm talking about? Like,
well,
it starts to get that funk smell, you know, like it's just, like, it just gets a little dusty, you know.
Well, but here's the natural consequences.
Yeah.
They have to sleep in the funky smell. I mean,
but, yeah, okay, I guess I could get that. But, like, you know, it's just because I've seen some ones. I mean, my room is messy, I'm not going to lie, but it's not that bad. But I've seen some rooms that are, like, ridiculous. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and if it gets that ridiculous, then you're really going to have to figure out what to do in terms of cleaning it. But it's not your job to clean the room. And what you can do is you can offer to help them to clean it, because sometimes they get so overwhelmed.
That's true. That's a good. I like that one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Help. Can I help you with it? Then
yeah.
If they get so overwhelmed. So, you know, there's different ways to do it, but I wouldn't make it a big issue, because as an adolescent, the bigger issues are safety issues.
That's true. I agree.
Okay. So here's another question. Our daughter is in high school, and she is always forgetting her lunch and homework papers. I am always having to bring them their lunch or their homework. Is this helping them? Is this helping individuate, or should I stop? Okay, so I don't know how old these kids are, but here was my rule with my kids. When they got to junior year, no. I didn't. If they left a book at home, I didn't bring it. If they left their lunch, I didn't bring it. Because when they get to junior year, you got to a year and a half, and they're off to college, right?
Sure.
So they have to grow up. And if you continually enable their behavior, then they become tethered to you because you're doing everything for them.
How about making their lunch?
I used to make their lunch.
Yeah, all the way through high school? Is that the rule?
Pretty much.
Yeah, my parents stopped making my lunch. They kind of made it every once in a while. But, I had to make my lunch for a long time.
Oh, wow. That's some impressive.
Well, I hated it. I'm not going to lie. Because the worst part was my parents all had healthy food, which I'm glad for now that I think about it.
Right.
I'm super glad. But when you're a kid, you pull the grapes out of the bag where the kids got the ding-dongs, you know? And, you're like, man, why can't I get that, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
And as you're older, you're like, appreciate it.
Yeah. No, I made their lunch, but if they left it behind that after junior year, that wasn't my problem.
Okay, I get that. That makes sense.
So
yeah.
I hope that...
But some kids are just forgetful. What about those kids? You know, those kids are just super forgetful. Like, I am very forgetful.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, I forget everything.
How do you think anybody's going to learn to remember if there's
no consequences for, yeah,
related to forgetful? Look, don't get me wrong. I suffered through the days that they left their lunch thinking they don't have anything to eat. But I can promise you that it stopped pretty soon after that because they wanted to eat their lunch.
That's true.
So it really does work. I mean, you just have to be consistent. And that's the other thing, because a lot of parents of kids with ADD are also ADD. That's me.
Yeah.
And so consistency is a big issue for us. Okay. So that was a great question. Thank you. I hope I answered it for you, that it was helpful. Okay. So how important is a bedtime? Our high school daughter is staying up past midnight doing homework. Okay, I don't know exactly how old she is. Again,
yeah,
it's
bedtime
like a junior year.
Is everything. As an educator, you got to get them to bed at a certain time, or the kid has to be like trying to go to bed at a certain time. You know?
All right. So, what do you think for a junior who's 16?
Somebody who's 16. Here's the other thing. It depends too. Like, are they? How active are they as a person? Like, I mean, are they playing sports after school? Are they doing, like, a lot of things? I mean, it all depends on the student. But to be honest, like, 10 o'clock bedtime, you know, if you have school starting at, like, say your school starts at 8, you know, you want your kid, that kid in bed by, like, 10. You want him, like, lights off in the bed by 10 because it's – well, there's a study that need more sleep. But, I mean, the reality is that – you need them awake the next morning so they could have the maximized of learning.
Right.
Because trust me, I've seen a kids, middle school, like I was a middle school kid, this behavior person on my school were talking about it. And one of his biggest problems is his mom lets him stay up till like whenever he wants to.
No, that's not good.
And yeah, then he comes and he's like, this is elementary, middle school.
Too young, yeah.
Yeah, and he's too young. And so he's a wreck when he comes to school. He's like, hasn't slept. He's falling all over the place, you know.
Right.
You see it a lot and it's a sad thing, but it's like.
But let me tell you my opinion on
yeah.
this, okay, too, because I agree with you that they need to go to bed.
Yeah.
But I think we need to drop the rigidity when they become juniors in high school.
Okay,
so
by the time they're juniors and seniors.
Right. So, in other words, we say to them, what time do you want to go to bed? Because that's what I used to do with my kids. What time do you want to go to bed? And, in fact, my younger son used to bring me his keypad so that he wouldn't get on the computer after 10. He would say 10 o'clock. So, you know, if he had extra homework, if he was stuck at live from 2:05 to, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then he had homework, well, he had to stay up and do it. Or if he didn't, you know, if he didn't get it done there. So you can't be rigid
mm-hmm.
when they're juniors and seniors. I mean,
yeah, I get to that point where they're, like, almost adults and they're about to go to college. You do have to, like, that makes sense. You do have to, like, let them be, try to, you know, do that adult thing, you know,
right.
become an adult. And
right.
eventually they'll might pay the consequences after a while, but they'll figure it out, you know.
Right, because I really believe that if you really start making those kind of things issues, you're going to end up butting heads. And, again, talk to your children about this. Don't just make the decision, involve them in the decision, educate them, give them the information, like what Anthony was talking about, how when you go to school, if you go to bed too late and you get up early to go to school, you're not going to be functioning at full
yeah.
capacity when you go to school. So, okay, whoever sent that in, thank you for that question. And okay, so here's the next one. What do you think I should be doing to help my 15-year-old son with individuation, so becoming an individual? Well, I think that you got to be coaching them instead of controlling them.
Yeah, 15, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. It's like Dr. Gabor Mate said in his book before, you know, if you want to develop motivation in a child, you got to give them autonomy. So you got to sit down and you got to talk to them and you got to make decisions together. And if they want you to help them with something, talk to them about what they would do. Communicate with them so that they learn the decision-making process, and, you know, don't be too involved in their every part of their life, because that's enmeshment. And then, you know, in family therapy, enmeshment is boundary, and if you're too enmeshed, you can't pull away. The child doesn't feel like they can pull away. So when they go off to college, they're still enmeshed, and it makes them very angry. So that's not a good thing. Don't be too involved. Step back, try to step back and just let them do their thing, but you're there being supportive at the same time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. I think, you know, it's hard to, but 15 is a hard age because you're making that transition now.
Right.
To where you were kind of overbearing or not even overbearing, but you're watching them a lot more. And now you have to make the transition, like you're saying, to like slowly let the reins out and let the kid like do his own thing, you know?
Right.
And I agree with that completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that special age.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Oh, yeah, no, I also think that, like, if you're, like, I think 15, I would say even by 16, I think, like, 16 is a good age to help the kids. You know, I like, you know, I mean, I would say 15, 16 for the kids, let them slowly start. But by 16, the kids are usually, like, got a good personality. And they pretty much know, like, what they want to try and what they don't. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah.
As far as an individual, I'd say by there's that magic number 16. I think we all say, and even what the Jewish tradition has the bar mitzvah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
No,
so
I
he's
think
like,
it's
he's
13.
Like a, he's becoming a man, right? Like
bar
a 15.
Bar mitzvah is 13.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I think it's like 15. Oh, that's quinceañera. Sorry, that's for the. You see, all these cultures have it at that age too. So it's like you're gonna let the person, the woman, become. You know, she's becoming a woman, becoming a man. It's that age where you have to like slowly let off the reins. You know.
Right.
It's kind of funny how the cultures like think know that too. You know.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk now a little bit about kids that have social anxiety that are teenagers.
Okay? Oh, okay.
So they have a hard time making friends, all right?
Yes.
My younger son was on the autistic spectrum, so he was at the far end, which was nonverbal learning disability. So he had some hard times with making friends. So what I would do is I would, especially in freshman year, I made sure I was setting up play dates for him. That may sound funny, but I had to do it. So I would call parents and have kids come over. Just one or two, especially if you have a kid with social anxiety disorder, you really don't want to overwhelm them. Okay, so one or two kids, he really appreciated this. I was there to watch the interaction. I made sure they had food, they had video games. You know, I was there to talk to him after the kids went home. If I saw things that just I wasn't comfortable with, I would talk to him about it. I helped him a lot. And I think it's really, really important for all the parents who are listening out there. Friends are so important during teenage.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think friends are probably the number one thing that will influence your child, like growing up, period. Like, always look to see how the friends are, what, you know, if they seem like good kids or if they're troublemakers or whatever, because who your kid hangs out with will be the biggest influence ever. Like, I mean, if your kid's hanging around a bunch of criminals, it's like, then you got to worry, you know?
Yeah.
Because he'll get in trouble eventually.
Right.
You know, well, if he's hanging around good kids who are good academic people, you know.
And that's why you always
yeah.
need to know who your kids are hanging out with.
Absolutely. Know their friends, definitely.
Have them over the house, because you will tell, you can tell so much about a kid by having them over your house.
Absolutely. Like, what, is he well-spoken? I mean, does he, you know, does he say hi to you? You know, lots of different things.
Does he look at you in the eye?
He look at you in the eye, you know.
Yeah.
All sorts of different things, you know, like you can tell about
right.
Kids by their friends by just a glance of meeting them. You don't have to, like, be all personal in their business, but you just get to say hi, you know,
right.
how are you, you know,
right.
normal things, you know.
And just kind of stick around. You can, you know, leave the room for a while, but just come and go so they know that you're around. And just listen to what the conversation is like. And because, you know, the last thing you want is for your child to get bullied. And you can absolutely pick that up very easily, which leads me into our next question, which really speaks to what we were just talking about. Our son is starting high school next year, and he's going to a new school. We just moved into the Southern California area. What should we do to help him fit in, make new friends, and do well in school? Okay, so first thing is, you know, whatever neighborhood you're in, make sure you try to find out some of the parents. You can meet parents that have kids your son's age, so you can kind of do what I did and connect them, hook them up, get them over to your house. If your son is creative, find out what it is that he really wants to do and find something that he can do at the school, in the high school, that
yeah.
will really speak to his creative side. That's
And, you know, he'll have something in common with the kids, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So that's really important. I think that would be the thing that I would do. And I was new, I told you before, moving to Southern California when my older son was 17 and my youngest son was 14. So it was difficult, but you can do this. And remember, friendships are real important, but good friendships are important. You don't want them hanging out with kids that are going to do, you know, things that are going to get everybody into trouble. That's
correct.
Not
yeah.
good. Okay, so here's our next question. Our daughter just finished her first year of college, and it seems like she spends a lot of time partying with her new friends. Her grades were okay, so they have not suffered. Should we be concerned of this? Is this normal? What should we watch for in danger signs? So is this normal?
Make sure she's not coming to the house stumbling. That's what she's
right,
saying.
That's
a danger sign. Now, I guess, you know, it's a hard thing. That's where I think parenting is honestly one of the most difficult things in a way. Like, it's actually easy for me because I deal with a lot of teenagers. But for instance, I mean, I'll even ask Justine. Justine has two boys, but like, did you feel at any time like your kids could at least tell you maybe that like, hey, I'm going to this party, you know, like, or I'm coming home? Or were you? Do you think you were like more like, oh no, you can't do this, you can't do that?
No, I was pretty open about things when it came to that. You know, it was sad because my older son did struggle with substance abuse.
So he went to the extreme with it.
Well,
yeah.
That's because he was bipolar. We didn't
know. Oh, okay.
But now he's on the right medication. He's 25 and he's doing much better.
Better, yeah.
But here's the danger sign,
yeah.
Okay? Because I was a substance abuse counselor, and when your kids go to extreme with anything, it's a problem.
Yeah.
So I did a talk a couple of years ago, and the title of it was Addiction Begins with ADD. So a very high percentage of people,
yeah, I agree with this completely,
with
by the way,
ADD have substance abuse issues.
I agree with that
completely. So when you see a child who is impulsive, he or she is extreme about things, if you see them eating a lot of sugar, because alcohol can absolutely do the same thing, if they're not medicated properly with the ADD, they may run to marijuana. So these are all the danger,
yeah,
signs
also,
that you want to look for.
Yeah, one of the major things, too, I agree with this completely, by the way, about, especially with ADD kids, because if the kid's okay and he's, you know, she's partying, it's one thing, but the thought process behind just reasoning out these social situations is very slow for the kids, and they're susceptible to wanting to jump in right away, because a lot of times they don't fit in as well. You know, they have a hard time with communication with other kids. They don't make friends as easy.
Right.
They lose friends easier sometimes. And so because they want to fit in more to that social group, they'll go to an extreme with these things.
Exactly.
And you see it all the time where I work, like all the time. They talk about really crude subjects. They talk overboard about a lot of things, where a normal social structure, these kids know better not to do this, where a lot of times the ADD kids or the kids will just go over the top with it. And like she's saying, it'll go to that extreme because they're that addictive kind of personality.
Exactly. Now, here's something for all you parents listening out there. If you start to see changes in your child so they become apathetic about school, all of a sudden they don't care anymore. Their grades are slipping. They're seem to be more angry than usual, get the drug test for marijuana. Because marijuana is absolutely the drug of choice for kids with ADD.
Correct.
I see a lot of adolescents who have talked to me about it and told me how it calms them down and it helps them sleep. But it's illicit. I tell them this. It's not something, you know, you can buy over the counter unless you have a prescription card. But I don't encourage that, because the THC levels nowadays in marijuana is up to like 22-23%.
Well, it's also here's the other problem with marijuana. I feel on a certain level, and I mean all the kids experiment with it, you know, nowadays, and it's not the big, I don't think it's a huge deal, but like what she's saying, when a kid's ADD and you're trying to figure out, and the kid's like, it mellows me out, all these things, it reacts differently, especially with ADD kids. Some kids, you know, it might be okay for it, but they don't have a doctor prescription for a lot of them. And so, but there's a lot of kids, it's not the drug of choice. And like she's saying, it can be, for a lot of kids, at least I think, it's a demotivator. It doesn't make them motivated, I don't care.
Well, let me explain. When,
yeah,
I talk about the THC level being so high,
yeah,
when the marijuana of my days,
yeah,
was 6%, okay? So here's what happens. These kids get, their brain kind of gets connected with this THC, because THC connects to,
yeah,
the fatty cells in your body, and the most fatty cells,
yeah,
are in your brain. So this is where you get that look of, I don't care, apathetic, okay? So we're closing down
yeah,
the show.
Yeah.
I can't believe it, because we've had a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's over, and I want to thank you, Anthony, for being with us tonight. And I do want to remind everybody who's in Southern California that I run a support group on Wednesday nights at the Center for Learning Unlimited in Torrance, California. Anthony's at that group as well,
yeah,
from 7:30 to 9. Also, if you want to get in touch with me, it's at missadd.com. And I want to say goodnight and thank you so much. We will be back on the air next Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And I want to remind everybody that you can listen to these on iTunes. So we have a couple of them on there right now if you want to go and listen. And I also want to remind everybody to please stay in the moment. This is Miss ADD saying good night.